Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. When I first met Brad Stafford Butcher, he was playing in a three-piece cover band, PJ Ray. I was interviewing him as part of my radio program. Shy and reserved, it didn't occur to me at the time that one day he would be forging a solo career in country music. The talented songwriter and musician is dedicated to his first love every spare minute in life. Raised in a musical household with a piano, it was the gift of a guitar that sealed his fate. For many of us, life becomes very full. And for Brad, as a father to four girls in a blended family, juggling work whilst managing music gigs, he is mindful of maintaining connection and balance. Since 2020, live music performers continue to rebuild their careers after COVID decimated a once thriving industry. Brad Butcher, welcome to What We Teach Our Children. It's so nice to be connected with you again in conversation.
It's my pleasure to be here.
It's been a while since we spoke, and particularly with you about your music, but I know that your career has been on a roller coaster since we were probably last connected 10 years ago. What's happened since you left the Mackay region?
Lots has happened. Life's sort of taken me on a few different paths at times. Like, I left Mackay in 2012, moved to Brisbane, and I spent 8 years down there. We moved there primarily to just get ingrained in the music industry in a major city and to meet some people and try and open some doors, and that did happen, thankfully. I had a lot of good fortune up until COVID hit, really. Things went well. I think COVID just sort of knocked the wind out of everyone's sails. And I know it did out of mine musically, but leading up to that, I was very fortunate to win a couple of golden guitars at the Country Music Awards down in Tamworth, and I felt like I had a bit of a trajectory on music that was slightly upward. But since COVID arrived, I got divorced, remarried, I've had two kids. I went back to work pretty much. I was cutting people's lawns for a living, which I wrote a song about. I had to do that. and I feel like just literally this year, life has just settled again. Like, my wife and I, our kids, we've been together 5 years now. Our kids are past the toddler stage, or, you know, about to start school. Our eldest ones are in high school, my stepkids. We had two businesses that we've been, you know, growing through that time. And I feel like right now we're in a great position to sort of really tackle things, and for me to get back into touring quite heavily this year. On the back of doing The Voice last year, I should mention too.
Well, I'm not sure you need to mention that. I'm sure a lot of people know you from there, or have seen you from there. It was great for exposure, but what has it changed about your opportunities or career?
Opportunities, just the phone started ringing again. Like I said, through COVID, everything just sort of plateaued. It was really, really disappointing. You know, 10 years prior to that, of a lot of hard work to build momentum and to build contacts. And it just seems like after COVID, the entire industry shifted. What they play on radio changed, the window of opportunity narrowed, and I still wanted to do, because I've always done what I love with music, you know, and I felt strongly that I didn't want to change to suit the industry. I wanted to stay as I was or who I am, because isn't that the most important part of artistic creation? Like, you have to be authentically you. So I felt like I got squeezed out of the industry. So I had to focus on different things, and I went back to school. I've just finished a degree, a Bachelor of Music degree, and I've got a whole new sort of plan for the next 3 years as to how to rebuild and get the wheels spinning again.
Well, I'm glad that this conversation with me didn't rely on me having a bigger audience than you, because that might have caused us a few issues. It's been I understand the trajectory.
It's tough, isn't it? It's tough, and you know, it's at every gig, it's like one person at a time. And I've been singing songs and playing my guitar for, God, it's almost 20 years now. in one way or another, and I feel like I've learned that much that I'm finally at a point now in my life where I'm confident within my own skin as to who I am and what I want to be. I'm confident with the instrument and with what I want to say. So a lot of people find that earlier in life. I didn't find it until I was in my mid to late 30s. I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad I've arrived, and I'm glad to be talking to you.
How did your early childhood influences really impact your direction in music?
The impact was that they didn't push us into anything. Mum and Dad, they were really good at saying that, or letting us know that our life was our life and we could do whatever we wanted with it. And that was really important. And I learned later in life, when I was in my early 20s, why that was, from my mum's upbringing. And it's a very important lesson that she learnt and imparted onto us. I remember a family piano was always in the house. Mum would play a lot of Beethoven and Bach and these things. She just had an interest in it and would teach herself to play it. And so my earliest memories are of her playing Fer Elise on the piano. And then I'd go out there and just find the notes, and I was able to find the same, to hear the key and figure it out. And that was mum's earliest influence on me. She then gave me her guitar when I was 11 years old, her acoustic guitar, which again, pulled it out of the cupboard, dusted it off. It hadn't been played in years. And when I was 11, we were living in Townsville at the time while my mum was studying at James Cook University. And they organised some guitar lessons with this little fella around the corner. I just remember he always had a black wife beater singlet on, a big black Akubra, and a roll your own cigarette hanging out of the corner of his mouth. And he showed me how to play House of the Rising Sun, Elvira, you know, some classic songs, country songs, or of any genre really. But he just got me started, where to put my fingers, how to strum the guitar, and he set me off on my path. So that was the earliest influence from my parents. Beyond that, there was never any pressure or advice to pursue music. It was always just a thing that was there, and I really enjoyed learning the songs that were being played on radio at the time. I'd press my ear against the speaker, and again, just by ear, I'd figure out where those sounds were coming from and how to emulate it on the guitar. So because I started there and I trusted my instincts to learn the songs that way, it kind of backfired on me, you know, 20 years down the track, because I'd always done it that way. And when I'm playing gigs now with I'll say in quotes, real musicians, and they're asking me what key's the song in, and I'm going, I have no idea. I put my hands like this, I do that. So that was also the catalyst for me doing the Bachelor of Music degree just over the last 3 years. It was about time I learned what I was doing instead of just, you know, memorizing everything that I had to do, because that's what it was. I was just memorizing the shapes, and this is how I'd play the songs. And through the writing process even, which came along a little later, I would be completely open to just sounds when I'm writing and finding what sounded right. And if it didn't sound right, then it was probably the wrong chord. I now have the knowledge to know that in each key there are, you know, a bunch of chords related to that key, and no matter what key you are, it all just shifts. So it makes it so much simpler to know what options I have when songwriting and playing. And also when listening to a song now, I go, oh, that's the key it's in. And I straight away know there's seven possible chords, generally speaking, that I'll check first, and I can pick up these songs so much faster now than I could when I was a kid. So I've kind of come full circle now.
In more ways than one. You also said you had two children of your own now. What connection do they have to music through you?
They're surrounded by music because of me. I mean, there's instruments everywhere, all through the house. They've got kids' pianos, and we just bought Lane a little drum set for Christmas. I've actually got it next to me here. I'm pinching the kick drum to take to Tamworth with me. I'm going to use it on stage.
Love it.
Their influence is just all around them, and not being forced or pressured onto them, but we've got ukuleles hanging on walls in the house inside. There's guitars in there as well. They've naturally just been picking things up and playing just for fun. They'll just run around the house going, look at me, Dad, I'm playing a song. I love that. You know, that's just fun for them at the moment, and I want it to stay fun. I want them, if they find the love for it, I want it to be purely because they enjoy doing it, because if it's not that and it's pushed onto them, I think it turns out to be something else, and I don't think it'll last.
Music teaches us so much more, though. Like, music is one of those things that is a universal language. So even to have an introduction in the home, which is something I grew up with, my children grew up with, appreciation of music gives you so much more. What do you think it's given you?
Besides a job, it's it expands your mind. It expands your mind because you've learned to find music in everything. And when you're always listening for it and always open to it, things come to you that you wouldn't normally experience. And I get that a lot with songwriting, but even just driving along in the car and you put the window down and you'll hear a sound that'll, you know when you put the back window down in the car and it does that, all of a sudden I can start turning that into a song. You know, it's all around us. And I feel like it just opens your mind to the world around you. And we associate music with every single thing we do in life as well. You don't get in the car without the radio. You don't go for a jog without putting your headphones in. Whatever it is, there's always music. And a lot of people aren't open to that and they don't absorb it like I know I do. And I think if I can impart that on my kids, it'll be a healthy thing for them to gain.
Conversely, they must have had an impact on you. I mean, I know myself when I had children, it completely changed my life. So how has it impacted your storytelling in relation to your music and songs?
I've always written from the heart. I've always written, you know, very earnestly and honestly as I can. It's always been a lived experience, but they kind of bring out the heart in songs even more. You know, I've written songs for them. There's one called Like the World Is Ending, which is a song I wrote for Katie about the first time she held Lane. COVID was going on at that time too. But the thought crossed my mind, what if this was the last time you ever got to... Oh, I'm going to cry. What if this was the last time you ever got to hold your baby? This is like the world was ending. And I thought, man, that's how intensely she's going to love you and I'm going to love you forever. So the hook of the song is she's going to love you every day like the world is ending. And songs like that arrive because of these kids I'm really proud of, and they're there forever now, you know.
Well, thanks. You've brought a tear to my eye now, which has changed everything about the direction of this. Because, you know, we all have connections in some way, whether from childhood with the people who raised us or influenced us, and connections to children when they come into our lives, whether they're our own or others. And I understand when you met your second wife that she had a couple of children, so you're living in a blended family. Mm. What's that relationship like for you as a new father?
It's tricky, especially early on, getting to know everybody, and the trust that everyone needs in that situation is something that I didn't understand fully at the time. You know, for Katie to let me into their life initially, that was a big thing for her and for anyone in that situation. There's a lot of trust that needs to be handed over, and then you've got to nurture that. You know, so in many ways, the best thing that happened for us and brought everyone closer together was the babies arriving, was their sisters arriving. And they love them. They dote on them. They're the best help for us too with everything we've got going on. They're just really good kids. And we're a really tight unit these days, you know, as tight as a blended family can be, I believe. But yeah, for me, mostly the biggest thing I think from that the kids have all given me is that you learn that parenthood isn't about raising kids. It's about you, how you react, how you behave. And that's what they pick up on. So the more I can work on me through all of this, the more these kids can learn from that. And that was a tough lesson to learn, especially early on, sleep deprived and everything else that was going on. It's been a real ride the last 5 years.
I've no idea how you became this wise so quickly, but I'm impressed. And I'm wondering if a lot of that has been because you also, you know, are a parent via distances, because as a musician, obviously you have to travel. You know, how do you manage that with Katie?
Firstly, she picks up a lot of the slack. You know, it's what she does for the family and for all of us is amazing. There's no other way around it. If I'm going to go and do what I have to do, I need to be on the road, and to keep costs down, I need to be traveling solo. You know, as soon as you start taking extra people and mouths to feed on the road, it makes it really hard to make ends meet. So the nature of the beast is that, unfortunately, whoever's back at home has to just pick up the pieces. And that's also why I've been pretty quiet on touring for the past few years for a number of reasons. While the kids were young too, it was also handy to be home, you know, an extra set of hands. But it's picked up in the last 12 months, and this year it's sort of back to full steam. And the only way to make it work is really just to make sure that when I am home, I'm present and helping as much as I can. And then when I'm on the road, I'm on the phone whatever they need. And if shit hits the fan, well, I may have to cancel things and I may need to be home. There still have to be a priority. That doesn't help Katie get through while I'm away. So it really is just a whole lot of work that lands on her shoulders. We're really lucky that my mother-in-law, Sue, Katie's mum, is incredible. She's such a great help to us. And I think it's like that thing, you know, it takes an army to do this, and it really does. And so all these different people chip in at times. Some of Katie's friends are just, you know, beautiful people, lifelong friends of hers that I'm fortunate now call friends of mine too. And when she needs anything, those guys are there in a heartbeat. So yeah, it's a real group effort. It's not easy. It is definitely some dark days, but you know, at the end of the day, if we were all to fall off the perch tomorrow, I'm doing what I love with my life. Katie's doing what she loves with her work and her life. And the family is just a juggle. We just have to balance it as best we can.
And that's really important to understand from an early age, because you can then set up parameters and boundaries. You mentioned it took a lot of trust for Katie to let you into her life and the children's lives. So how has that unfolded, and how do you maintain that trust and unconditional love when you're away so much?
It's just making the most of the time that I'm home. That's all I can do. While I'm away, it's kind of, you know, it's out of my hands. So making sure that they know that while I'm away, this is my job, I'm going for work, it's necessary to pay the bills and all of that. But also setting a good example for them while I am there, I'm working hard, I'm setting goals. We've got our vision board set up in the bedroom that we look at every day. The girls see that too. They've got their things on there. It's just I think that's what it is. It's incorporating them in it as much as we can, so they feel like they're a part of it, and talking to them, especially Isla and Hudson, the two eldest. They've been through a rough patch too. You got to remember that their mum and dad separated, you know, 6 years ago now, and everyone's had their own hurdles to jump. But you know, I think just as if we're all communicating, we're all on the same page, then everyone knows where I am, I know where they are, everyone's safe, looked after, and we make plans for the future for when I'm home. That's kind of the best thing we can do.
How do you remain connected? How useful is modern technology exactly?
The group chat's the simplest way. Everyone's in on that. It's hard though, because the little ones are little, so that's a different story. Isla's, you know, she's 15 now, so it's easy for that to work. But then the other hurdle is with her dad. I sort of let Katie handle him, you know. So I guess everything kind of streams through Katie in that way then, you know, for obvious reasons too. That's their mum. That's who they go to first. I'm just kind of, in many ways, on the sidelines if they need me. I'm always there if they need something, with the big girls, that is. And then the babies, well, you know, as soon as you walk through the door, they're climbing your leg, or they want to play on the jumping castle. We've got a little inflatable jumping castle that we put in the backyard, and they just love to get out there and jump on that, put the hose on it, and they have a ball, you know. I'm basically just... I'm basically just the bad guy most of the time, to be honest, because, you know, mum's everybody's favourite, and if there needs to be any lines drawn, or, you know, if anyone's bent any rules, well, it's me who's the guy coming in strong over the top, telling them, hey, that wasn't right, apologise to her, or you do this, or whatever it is, and then they retreat to mum as their safe place. So the dynamic in our family is I guess it's probably fairly normal to most families, but there is that extra element of, you're not my dad. That's always going to be there, but we are good friends too. That hasn't been said in a long time, which I'm grateful for, because it's tough when they do that. But we have a really good relationship. It's a balanced thing we've got going on now. And as the girls get older, and you know, we all get a bit older, I feel like it just the lines or the divisions between families and stuff all disappear. We are one unit now, you know.
You're surrounded by a lot of women, and women go through a lot. And I'm not sure how you're going to manage all of that. But what are your older girls teaching you ahead of time to prepare you for your younger girls when they go through similar things?
You know what? I feel like my childhood has taught me things that I'm implementing now when it comes to the big girls. And there's things that have already happened in little incidents and stuff of people, again, pushing the boundaries, and they becoming adults, and they think they're ready for certain things or whatever, you know. And there's straight away I go, I did the exact same thing at their age. In fact, I did it worse. You know, I was typical 14, 15 year old boy, you know. So there's been lots of that stuff I've Katie and I have been chatting about lately of incidents and that have gone on that we're like, okay, well, we can't get upset. This is just normal. Every kid does this at a certain age. This is what happens. They want to be an adult. They want to try things. They want to have a drink of that, you know, without permission, I should say. There's lots of these little things which are so common at that age. So all I'm doing in that respect is looking back on my past and going, all right, how was that handled when I was a kid? How could I improve on that? And then trying to do it better.
Reflection, I love it. In fact, that's how I parented my children, because I was a single parent, and at each stage that they reached where there was a challenge, and some of it was them coming home from high school saying, you know, what's the big deal about marijuana? And I'd be like, idea, we're at that point already. And then, you know, thinking about the best way to manage that, where there's no threat to them from either overuse or the negative impacts, and then they're left out there on their own. So well done. Congratulations. I found that the best way was to reflect on my own experience and then bring that and then tell the story, because they can identify. Yeah. Then, oh, hang on, you haven't always been an adult.
You're either going to, you know, put up a brick wall and say you can't do that until you're 18. That's just not happening, which some people do, and each to their own. But I feel like that just creates a brick wall between them, us and them. So it's about creating a way where, again, it's trust. You're like, okay, in a safe environment, we know you're going to do this anyway, or you've already done this, so let's just stop doing that. If you want to do it, this is where it happens, and we can keep an eye on you. And, you know, I don't know, it seems like the safest path forward for everyone.
What do you hope for the future of your family and your girls?
Just health. Everyone healthy and happy. There's been friends of mine who've lost little kids to different things, and it's just so sad seeing that. I just want my kids to grow up and experience life, you know, have the same good fortune I've had to become an adult, become a parent. And yeah, that's really all I hope for. Along the way, if I can impart this love for music that I have, or if even if that's just a part of their life that they have, that always, it's always there when they catch up with friends and they can play the guitar or have a sing a song, but then they go and do some other thing. I'd actually love them to study medicine and do what Katie's done. You know, she's a podiatrist, and she's seriously considering going and completing a degree to become a GP. And I would love it if the kids followed in her footsteps. Just, it's such a rewarding job. It's also a really grounding job. There's often times when Katie will come home and her perspective on what's important and how lucky we are that everyone's healthy and happy, and, you know, especially when you see some people's circumstances that they live in, and it's just like, wow, the perspective is the big thing. So yeah, I really just want the kids to grow up and be healthy and happy. That's it.
I wish that for you too, your entire family, and for you, Brad. I am so grateful that you've joined me today and been so open and authentic and vulnerable to share your very personal journey. I look forward to following it, and I can't wait to see what those girls decide to do with their life, because realistically, the world is their oyster.
100%. Thank you, Kim. It's been a pleasure to chat.
Brad Stafford Butcher, sharing his personal story about music, blended families, and maintaining connections when one parent is a long way from home. You can follow Brad on socials to discover more about his music and events. All the links are in the show notes. Join me next week when we delve into the world of EQ, emotional quotient, also known as emotional intelligence, and the impact out-of-sequence events can have on the men in our lives. Teaching our children this skill can fortify them in times of uncertainty and tragedy. Don't forget, add this podcast to your favourites for notifications and subscribe to my news on my website. That's kimkleidon.com, kimkleidon.com. This podcast is recorded in Launchpad Studios thanks to Greater Whitsunday Innovation, formerly Split Spaces.